because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.
We should do our pre-planning.
Let's go, man.
I like that look on your face.
I'm fired up, bro.
Let's go, man.
Oh, Robert, how was your weekend? Did you do anything that felt right?
What did I do? Went to the west side, which is a big trip if you're on Maui and you don't live on the west side. So I think I was telling you last week with the Maui Pickleball League, we go across the island to different clubs and we went to Kapalua, which is this beautiful, beautiful place on the west side, kind of on the northwest side of the island, that it's kind of like situated on a hill and then you got the water below and you get these different climates. Like it rains and stops and rains and stops. It's just really, really beautiful and lush over there and green. And it was fun to go explore that side a little bit.
That seems lovely.
What about you, Adam? Anything fun?
Yeah. So I went down to Savannah, Georgia for, I think it was the Dink for Pink was the title of the tournament. So, really cool place, has a, you know, a soft spot in my heart down in Savannah, Corinne and myself, it's within driving distance for us. And, we've probably been down, I don't know, 4 or 5 times since the pandemic started, a little bit of teaching, a little bit of playing, have some friends down there. And so they're doing some great things down there at the Savannah Golf Club. It's been really cool to see the progress of the pickleball program there. They have some, you know, some stalwarts of the community down there, very involved in pickleball, throwing in money to prize pools and cool events and charity stuff. So it's really popping down there. And it's been really, really cool to see the progress, like I said. So I'm not sure exactly the exact steps in the process, but basically Jalen Brennan, former solid pro player, was kind of doing a little bit traveling around the tour, playing some pickleball tournaments here and there, but she was teaching tennis down at the Savannah Golf Club, and she got the pickleball bug and kind of started to mention to some of the higher ups at the club about pickleball and eventually talked them into to building 4 courts down there. I wouldn't say that there was necessarily a pushback, but I think that there was a little bit of tension between the tennis and the golf and some of the pickleball getting started there. And it seems each trip we've been down there, there's been less and less tension. So it's really catching fire. They have 4 more courts. So they have 8 courts now, a beautiful little overhang pergola type thing with some bathrooms, a bar. You can get food and everything there. Now they have the golf people after the rounds coming over, hitting the ball around a little bit, having some drinks. Lots of not just play, but social events involved that Jalen has done with the club down there. So great vibe, great hospitality from the people. And I always enjoy my time down in Savannah. And it's kind of a little microcosm of a lot of the clubs and the pickleball stuff, specifically at country clubs, that's happening around the country. So really cool stuff, really cool event. And I'm excited to be a part of it again next year.
I'll tell you one thing, Adam, they like their cocktails in Savannah.
They do. So really,
especially at Savannah Golf Club.
Yes. The only bad thing I have to say about Savannah is that it takes me 3 to 4 days to recover when I leave there. half of that is an alcohol hangover and the other half is a food hangover, because they have great food down there. And as you know, Robert, I like to eat, and eating almost always feels right to me. So there you go. Also, they did have a tournament as well. I was supposed to play with Rob Cassidy. As you know, Rob, playing with Rob several times yourself, Rob is a great, Rob Cassidy, great player, a very lovable character in the sport, but I would probably put him pretty high on the list of doesn't always get where he's supposed to get. So
that's one way to put it.
Yeah. Whether that's actually making it to the tournament, whether that's, you know, getting to his court for each match, whatever the case may be, it's just kind of one of the things that's part of the deal with Rob Cassidy. And
it's part of the charm.
That's right. Well, with the hurricane and some of the, you know, terrible weather down there, he was not able to make it. So I ended up playing with, I believe his name was Josh Reason. He's been playing about a year. Old tennis guy, nice game. Had some really nice shots out there. But at the same time, Gives a little hint of his experience. He did not know that you switch sides at six in game three. So I wouldn't say he was a veteran of the tournament circuit. Three other really solid teams there. Gold went to Anderson Scarpa and Greg Dow, who played almost flawlessly against Rafa Hewitt and Kyle Yates, who captured silver. Rafa Hewitt and Kyle Yates probably had some better shot making and some flashier stuff out there, but I'm not sure Dow and Scarpa missed more than a handful of balls between the winner's bracket final and the gold medal match. So good to see them kind of capture that gold. A $6,000 prize purse to the first place team was
legit money.
Was legit money. And I know those guys have been grinding and practicing, and I think that they have done had plenty of close matches with good teams and beat good teams, but I'm not sure they've made a medal run. So kind of cool to see them on the stand, even though it was a smaller tournament.
Yeah, it's been they've been a weird one for me to see. It's like, I think it was maybe Charlotte. Was it Charlotte or was it Raleigh? The North Carolina PPA, wherever that was.
Okay, it was Charlotte. It was Charlotte. Yeah,
I know they had some really good results there, and then you'll see them kind of go like 1-2, 2-2 in an APP, and you're just like, what's going on? Like,
right.
Just the inconsistency has been really perplexing to me, because it feels like, you know, and when I watched them play Charlotte, I was like, oh, these guys, like, you know, Dow on the right has great backhand counters, really fast hands, like he was on everything. Anderson on the left, like, didn't make a ton of errors, had some crafty speed up stuff like that. So it's just it'll be interesting to see if they've kind of I don't know what the word is. I don't want to say plateaued, because it's too inconsistent for plateau.
Right.
But to see if they'll kind of get over that hump and start getting more consistent results, especially at the APPs.
Right. And I chatted with Dow briefly, and I think they're pretty into it. They do some drilling. I know they got Jake Kuzmeter down there and a couple other players in Charleston, South Carolina. So yeah. I think that they're working on their games, and it showed, because it's kind of weird too, because you mentioned some inconsistencies, which I've seen too, kind of in the draws. But in terms of gameplay in this tournament, the amount of thirds made, the percentage of thirds made, and non-freebies with the missed dinks and some of the midcourt stuff was really spectacular, really high percentage play from them. So
you know what that reminds me of, Adam?
What's that?
Your trick shot.
Oh yeah, my trick shot. I only have one, Robert.
And that, what is that?
Uncontrollable, not missing, Robert. That's all I got. I wanted to give a shout out to Savannah, doing really cool things down there, and I'm looking forward to getting down there again here in the next few months, for sure.
Savannah bananas,
that's right. Oh yeah, by the way, chef,
remember that thing we ate? Well, we gotta tell that story.
Trash,
what was it
can,
called?
Trash can nachos. I still have nightmares about it. Okay, I'm gonna go through the whole process. Okay.
Yes.
So we heard from some of the locals that if you go to Savannah Bananas game, which is a very fun, entertaining experience, a minor league baseball team, they have this thing called trash can nachos, and they actually serve it on a metal kind of Oscar the Grouch trash can top lid. And what it has is it has circle round tortilla chips. You know exactly the ones I'm talking about. It has liquid cheese. It has canned chili.
Yeah,
and then it has, obviously no one was using a knife. What it is it's a worker with plastic gloves that mashes up hamburger patties and hot dog wieners and sprinkles them on top of the nachos.
Oh, it's ludicrous.
Nothing green to be seen anywhere. And sure enough, we got the trash can nachos, and 10 minutes later, they were all gone, and I was paying the price for it for about half a week.
worth it. All right, that's Savannah.
What do we got here?
Well, I mean, today is the, are we doing mixed men and women's rankings today, or are you trying to do just one list?
Oh no, we're just doing one list. I've had a couple people ask about like lists on paper, not just us talking about them. So I wrote down the finalized men's list and women's list on a piece of paper.
Thank God you did it on paper and not on the computer, because it's way harder to transfer stuff on a computer.
Yeah, we do this easy. Very efficient. I got a camera here. I got a camera here. So I'm going to hold this up. Oh, wow. Oh, wow, this is bad here.
Adam and technology, this is fantastic.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wait, we got it here.
Uh-huh. Pan out.
And I got all the nicknames too, Rob. We're going to go through them.
Of course you do.
Okay. So we're going to go through the nicknames because that's fun.
And just so you guys know, we'll go over this rankings list. There's been some hot off the press news from MLP. So we'll go over some of that. I know people have reached out with wanting to know kind of my take, our take on the new format that they announced, and everything else that's happening with it. So we'll get into that a little bit, and we'll talk about some new ownership moves at MLP, and I think more to be announced.
Absolutely, Robert.
Anything else? Oh, I mean, this could be a seven-hour podcast.
Yeah, who knows? I was just going to let you know that I am the team captain for our team, the Jackrabbits, and I don't know any of the new rules. So I'm excited for you to fill me in on the rules for this upcoming
upcoming MLP. Me and rules with MLP, just, you know, two peas in a pod.
Oh, let's don't get this started again. My goodness. Time heals. Maybe it's time to bring it back up. So, okay. Finalize men's list. Let's run through this real fast. We have Benny Boy, number one. We have Riley, take him to IHOP Newman at number two. We have Matt, Matty Dub, Matt Wright, number three. We have J Dub, Dub at number four. We have BDL, Big D Long at number five. We have number six, Baby Dill, Dylan Frazier. Number seven, Colin Johns, the Milk Monster, probably the person
for men's mixed.
No. This is the men's doubles list, buddy.
Oh, okay.
We're going back through it with the nicknames.
With the nicknames.
That's right. So
I thought we were going to do the mixed rankings with the nicknames.
No, Rob, come on, man. Come on.
That's me. That's on me.
Come on. It is on you, but it's okay.
I'll get better.
Okay, good. number eight, we have Chet Subaru, AJ Kohler, a.k.a. Biscuit. We have number nine, Andre Deescu, Romanian Tower, number one. Number 10, we have the crime dog, Tyson McGuffin, take a bite out of crime. Oh, yes. Number 11, we have Loongie Tunes.
I like that.
Number 12, Jay Delivers. Number
Hair Chest.
Number 13, Tom Wilson. Number 14, Gucci
Zane. Nothing for Thomas?
I just got Tom. That's it.
Okay.
That's it. Tom Wilson. I don't know what else to say about him. I think he's pretty.
I thought we'd just call him AJ's cousin.
AJ's cousin. I like that too. I think that works perfectly. Number 14, Gucci Zane. Number 15, hey baby, DJ Young.
For DJ, I like him thick.
I like
him. he said that in an APP interview, and it's still one of the greatest moments of live television.
Yeah, BTM, man. That big, thick monster, man. You got to love it. Number 16, DJ Kilo Kyle Yates. That doesn't refer to anything. It's a high school friend that we call DJ Kilo. Okay. So that's my inside joke. Number 17, it's a Lang thing.
I love that.
Eric Lang. Number 18, shout out to Warnick again. Callan Dawson.
Callahan.
Number 19, Thor's Hammer, Pat Smith. Number 20.
Thanks, mate.
Number 20, Travis Rettenmeyer. That's all I have. I don't know Travis very well, so I don't have a good one for him.
Travis, we need a solid nickname for you.
Come on. Oh, I think Tennis Sucks. He had a Tennis Sucks shirt on, so we'll go with that.
I like that.
Number 21, Andiamo, Julian Arnold, # beat him with energy. There we go.
No. I need the deep eye stare.
The deep eye. It's enthralling and uncomfortable.
Beat them with energy.
Number 22, Cat Lover, Spencer Smith. Number
23. Why Cat Lover? Does he love cats?
Because he loves cats. He always, I get on social media a decent amount, but not a lot. But every time I'm on there and he posts something, it has to do with cats. So
interesting.
So there you go. Number 23, Rafa Hewitt. I don't have one for him. Or Brendan Long. I don't have one for Brendan Long either at number 24. And then, of course, number 25, the Bernstein Bears. I don't know if anyone used to read the Bernstein Bears books when they were a kid.
Classic.
But I did. So,
I did too. That's our time.
That's our time.
Our generation.
We ran through it. That's the men's list. We got the women's list official to the camera right here.
Love this.
Oh, there it is.
Really good. Well done.
And we're just going to run through it real fast. We have no nicknames here. I just thought better of it. I don't know. Seems like nicknames with the guys is easier.
I would probably say something wrong. We would need a female guest to do the nicknames for the women's list. Maybe we'll do that at some point.
I agree that. Number one, Annalee Waters, shocking. Number two, Andrea Kuhn.
What are we doing here?
This is the women's doubles.
You're just going through it? Just
list.
Names?
Yes. Because people ask me. People ask me something.
Let them rewind the last episode.
Whatever. Annalee Waters. Two, Andrea Kuhn.
Or
three.
Don't we have show notes? This is absolutely ridiculous that you're listing these.
All right. I'm done. It no longer feels right.
It does not feel right. So Thomas Shields at the dink. Let's get show notes and let's put both of these lists in our show notes. Thank you.
Yeah, by the way, as you guys can tell today, I'm a little hopped up. Little shout out, Simone Jardine. This is a 9.5 out of 10 K-Cup, and I would recommend it to everyone. Cafe Bustelo.
Yep.
Fantastic.
Know it.
And low in sugar, super tasty. Check it out. 9.5 out of 10 Adam Stone ranking.
What? Coffee doesn't have sugar.
Huh?
Coffee doesn't have sugar.
K-Cups can.
Some K-Cups can, yeah, if you do like the little latte.
And you can add it to it, Robert.
What? Ooh, yeah, it's a good point, Adam.
There we go. All right.
I didn't think you mess with K-Cups. I thought you were, you have the expensive machine.
I do, but, sometimes, convenience is nice.
Sure.
The whole espresso process is at times tedious.
Not when you're at that house that we were at in Newport. Remember that? House. Just press espresso on the iPad, and then like the next room over, it starts making an espresso. It's like this is nice.
I mean, honestly, if I had to guess, I would say that's 10K plus.
Oh, it has to be. Yeah.
10K plus for that espresso maker.
It has to be.
Yeah, for sure. So that
probably
place
worth
was
every dollar.
That place was ridiculous, by the way, too. That whole house was unbelievable, man.
That's that's where we recorded our very first inaugural episode.
Wasn't there a deer head on the wall, like right in between the chairs? You remember that?
I think, was it a deer? I don't know if it was a deer. I don't know my horns very well.
I don't like to hunt, so I don't
know. I'm a big horn guy.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, mixed list?
Mixed list.
Let's get it.
What do I have on here? Okay, yeah. Well, I got to find it first.
I believe in you. Yeah, that first when you were doing the nicknames, I thought you were doing just a very rapid mixed men's list.
Oh.
I was like, CJ at 7, that's really aggressive.
Yeah, it is. Okay. All right, here we go. I found it. It was fun. I like the nicknames. I almost had one for everybody. And, some of them make sense and some of them don't. But I have my entire life, Rob, I have been a really big fan of nicknames always. And it's just fun, kind of like lists. So I rolled with it. I hope you guys enjoyed.
Dun, <da-da>.
Here we go. All right. So first of all, mixed list, men's list. There's several players slotted in pretty even, pretty close. But there's some pretty big discrepancies as well. So there's a lot of, just rock solid guys that have great blocks, great dinks, great consistency that just don't necessarily have the firepower in mixed doubles. I could probably label myself in that group as well. So
mix is super interesting in respect to a men's list because it's very, very often dependent on your partner, the female.
Oh, for sure. Yes.
You know what I mean?
Definitely.
So this is a hard one to do, I bet, because once you get kind of outside having like a top 10 lady partner, it gets pretty jumbled down there. You know what I mean?
Yes, I agree. And it is a little bit deeper with the women recently, but there was a stretch of time where if you didn't have a, say, 5 to 7 or 5 to 8 or top 8, whatever girl, you were really screwed. Kind of no matter how much court you could cover, how big your game was, it's still a little bit there.
Yeah.
So just, we've talked about many times with the depth situations on the two genders and how they are quite different. So
are we doing this based on what you believe the mixed ability to be? Or are we doing it based off results, based on who their partners have been? Or are we doing this kind of independent of who their partners would be, you know, let's call it, you know,
yes.
If somebody else had Anna Lee as a partner.
Right.
Okay.
It's kind of like in a vacuum partner. Everyone has, I don't know, whatever. Who is in the middle of my list? Everyone has Suzanne Navarre as a partner.
Sure. Okay.
Whatever.
Gotcha.
Right. And I know I've gone back and forth a couple of times on these lists, you know, just talking about actual rankings, what percentage is going into upside and predictive value, and what is going into, you know, past results. And it is a delicate balance, and it's never going to be right. And it's kind of why these lists are cool, for especially for us talking heads who need content and things to talk about, because there's really no right answers, and it's a kind of a fluid discussion, and I think that's cool.
Would it be fair to say that you created this list based on what feels right?
I think that is exactly I think that's exactly what happened, Robert. Exactly. Okay, so big shock here at number one, we have Ben Johns.
Okay.
We have Riley Newman. I think that those are pretty much just like the men's group. I think right now it is a Ben in his own tier in men's doubles and mixed. Riley pretty damn close closing that gap in both gender and mixed. And I think they're both kind of in their separate tier. And then I kind of have a
tell me this real quick. This is an interesting hypothetical.
Yes.
Do you think, let's say there's a clone of Anna Lee. There's two of them. Mm-hmm. And you have Ben and Anna Lee playing Riley and Anna Lee. Who wins that?
I don't know, man.
So it's that close.
I think it's that close. I think Riley, I think he has the best shot in pickleball, and I don't think it's particularly close with the forehand IHOP pancake. And I think these gaps have like even in the last, you know, 4 to 6 months have really, really shrunk. So yeah. I have Ben in his own tier at one, gender and mixed. I have Riley in his own tier at two, gender and mixed. And then here in mixed, I have about three or four players that are very tight. And I'm going to go with number three, JW Johnson.
Yep. That's what I would
agree. Just outlandishly consistent. And I do not think that he has reached his ceiling in terms of full-fledged aggression and court coverage, which I do think that he can do, and occasionally gets a little too passive, in my opinion. Yeah. We talked about the same thing in men's.
Yep. Not quite, like, has the ability to be more explosive, in my opinion.
I agree. Yep. And he does it, of course, he does it better in mixed than he does in men's, but I still think that there's a gear. I almost think that possibly... Yep. Someone, you know, a spot or two down here, like maybe in a J and a Deckel, possibly overextend.
Yeah, agreed.
And J-Dub kind of underextends. Is that a word? Is that a word?
Yeah, underextends is absolutely a word. It feels right.
It feels continue. Right. Correct. Yeah. So just a brief little note on that. Number four, I have J Delivers.
Mm-hmm. Hair chest.
Just hair chest. Outlandishly consistent. Just really, really good on the full stretch. So hard once that exchange starts when he's in the middle of the court for the man to get it away from. And of course, very difficult for the woman to get that ball away from him. Really uses his length well, plays well with his, you know, rock solid partner, Jesse Irvin. And I give him the edge over probably more upside, more explosive Deckel Bar, just with that rock solid consistency from Jay.
Yeah. How much of that consistency do you think is because of Jesse, though?
I mean, a decent amount. Yeah. I mean, yeah. A decent amount, but it's hard to say. She's just so rock solid, just so consistent, really good with her spot picking, on going when to go behind the guy. So of course, his partner is a huge factor in this. But
like with Jocelyn, he loves to, like, he plays his best when he's able to move.
Uh-huh.
And men, sometimes you see him kind of, even with Tyson, like when Jocelyn was playing the right, like Jocelyn's still trying to get involved on every ball, posting up middle of the court, even from the right side.
Yes.
Like, I feel like that's how he has to play if he's going to play his best. And in mixed, he's allowed to do that, right? So I think that's where he kind of really shines. And if he had, you know, I don't, their partnership is fine. I think they're starting to figure it out with Jocelyn and Tyson. But I think if Jocelyn had a partner where Jocelyn could just roam and do his thing, he'd probably be getting better results in men's, I think.
Definitely. I think, yeah, he's he likes to be on the ball. You know, and if he gets kind of frozen out or he gets a little flat footed and doesn't have his movement, I think it affects every factor of his game.
He's more likely to get lit up in that respect.
Totally. When
he's
flat footed, slower hands.
If he's controlling the dinks and he's moving, he's more on those counters than he is if he's kind of isolated and just kind of getting a random ball here and there. So it's a really big deal for him, I think.
I think that there's a couple people that are similar to that. And I think that Jay is the most extreme example that we have out there of exactly what you're talking about. So I couldn't agree more. Number five, BDL, Big D, Dekelbar. So all the tools. I do, like I mentioned, think he occasionally overextends a time or two too much. But of course, at the same time, you know, him being that present in the middle is getting so much benefit from that. So it's hard, so hard. I know the lower level guys and the, you know, those keyboard warriors love to talk about, you know, guys getting in front of girls and taking too many balls and overextending. Yeah. And, you know, it's pretty obvious when he runs over there and misses a dink, but you don't see that benefit with a giant wingspan in the middle that forces an error or two also. Yeah. So Nix is a delicate balance. I think that the two players above him are just a hair more consistent right now with their play, but Dekel has the upside and the firepower to definitely move up to number three on this list in short order if he, you know, polishes his game just a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it's, especially with NML, it's been an ongoing conversation piece by them of Dekel's inconsistency in mixed. And why he's not like, because you're right, he has all the tools and the talent to be an absolutely elite mixed player, especially with his movement and his wingspan. But like you mentioned before, can overextend. And, you know, because it is a delicate balance, especially when you are that long, you feel like I can get everything, you know, I should go for all of these. So to me, it might be a bit high on the list. I can think of a few people that are probably have above just purely based on results. Mm-hmm. But if we're talking tools and talent, totally agree. Easy top five. But in terms of results and consistency and doing it with different partners, probably a bit high.
Yeah, I can't argue with that at all. And I do think it is that kind of mash of results and what he has to work with and possibilities to take a step forward. And I can't disagree with anything you just said. So I think that five is fine, but if, you know, you came out with your list, which you're not going to do,
correct.
And he was a couple spots down there. I couldn't say a thing about it. So, yeah. Dekelbar number five, number six, Baby Dill, Dylan Frazier.
Yeah.
I like Dylan, man. I've been high on him for these. I've been watching him these last few months. I like what he's doing, like his demeanor out there, like his vibe, like his game.
Love his demeanor. He's so chill and such a good dude. And
yeah. So I'm high on Dylan. He's checking a lot of the boxes I like. He doesn't even have a tennis background, which is silly. And I love him. And I put him there at number six. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he's proven he belongs there, and he's proven that he can play anywhere on the pickleball court with any partner, which is pretty rare these days in terms of being strong on the right, strong on the left. I think he's got a lot of room to improve as well. You know, he doesn't have some of the fastest hands out there, but I think there's still a lot of room in terms of developing attacks. And so we'll see where it goes. But his consistency and his hand speed will carry him a long way, just those two aspects.
Yeah, for sure. And we all know he has that little flippy forehand off the bounce attack he really loves. Yeah. And just imagine, it's obviously a ridiculously high quality attack in terms of pace and like height over the net, but he does go to the same spot a lot. If he could diversify that or get a couple extra slippery attacks and go to some different spots, I just think that the ceiling is quite high.
He needs to hire Derek Shearer for that little misdirect.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Derek, you've got a career here as a forehand flip consultant. Get on it.
Yeah, who doesn't love Derek Shearer? Like I said, short and stocky. That's my guy. What number are we on? That was six. Okay, so number seven, we have Matty Dub Matt Wright. And You know, I think it's been, he hasn't had some great results lately, but that's really has not been that many tournaments. It's only a handful of tournaments that maybe they haven't done what they were supposed to do, but still talked about it a lot on the men's list, still high end skill and high end talent, just lacking the explosiveness and the athleticism of these guys on the list in front of them. And I think it's with the balance of some of the other guys being better movers, but him still having that really good skill, I think seven is a pretty reasonable spot for Matt Wright. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right on. I think right on. sorry, so bad.
So good, though. So bad.
I think in terms of, we always talk about it, like in terms of skill and handling the ball, one of the most talented guys out there, maybe the most talented guy out there. And still, even with Mix, even though his movement's not what it used to be in terms of explosiveness, he's still super long. He still can kind of poke forehands from the middle without moving over too much. And it's tough to see, right? It's because he's always playing with Lucy. So it's, you know, if we're looking at mixed doubles in a vacuum, how does he do with somebody else? I think he does pretty damn well, regardless. Yeah. So mm-hmm. I think it's a reasonable spot for Matt. And still one of the best mixed players in the game.
Sounds good. Number eight, the crab walker himself, AJ Kohler.
Yep.
Really good. Like I said, with the crab walk, really good along that kitchen line, looking for his opportunities in the middle to poke. Can really flip balls from all different spots, all different angles, all different heights. So the offensive firepower, I think, allows AJ to be in the back end of that top 10, even though he will have some occasional inconsistencies with his results and his game. I think the offensive firepower and the trigger pulling and the flippy long stockings that he loves to do puts him at number eight on my list.
Yeah, I think talent-wise, no doubt. Long, really moves super well laterally. Still can be exposed, I think, with the lob a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, you know, not coming from a tennis background. As we know, guys with non-tennis backgrounds have questionable overheads.
That's a fact.
So I think that's actually just generally speaking about playing. I think players recognizing that and throwing up lobs to those guys, especially that don't move as well front to back, is a play that hasn't been used quite as often as it could be. So I think there's still room in terms of, you know, figuring out this game of pickleball and using new tactics. I think that's a big one that we might see even more of, even though the lob's been, generally speaking, more prevalent, especially this year, than it has in the past that we've seen.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, I think, you know, with the way Kohler plays, I think he's built for mixed doubles. Like he's a great mixed doubles player, covers a lot of court. He's clearly long, but he's also sneaky long, where you're like, yeah, no way he got
that.
It's
hard to get it away from him, man. It just is. It's very similar to Jay. I just think of so many exchanges I've been in with those guys and mixed where I can't get it away from them. Yeah. And I end up in the end, they end up poking one at a full stretch, you know, off one of my really good counters, and it's just too good, you know? So yeah. Kudos to them. And AJ Kohler, number eight. Number nine, another enigma, you know, tough to rank. All the firepower, all the inconsistencies, all the good stuff. DJ Young at number nine. Just such an offensive talent, though. And while that's great in men's, I think it's even better in mixed to have all those weapons. So I think that while he still might lay an egg here and there, I just think that the firepower, when he's on and when he's doing his thing, it's a lot for any man or woman to handle. So I have the upside of DJ Young at number nine.
Yeah, I think that's a great spot for him. He, like you said, if we look at this list, with the exception of Dylan so far, heavy left side men's players, right? Just mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. they have the creative ability to manufacture offense, and which is a big deal in mixed. Like you have to be able to move the ball around and attack and flip and DJ's got that in spades. So
yeah, but not only attack and flip, which I can do just fine, cover behind you as well. That's my issue. So those longer guys, especially AJ and DJ, they can put pressure and they can cover behind them. Of course, they're going to get beat behind, but that's something that I feel with a little less wingspan is just too tough for me to do at times, is put that pressure and cover the whole court. So they have both of those offensive weapons and that length and court coverage. So DJ Young, number 9. Number 10, rounding out the top 10, I'm going to go with Tyler Loom. So one of the first, not left side players. Obviously a lefty plays the right side, but I don't necessarily see that as a total issue. There's plenty of good left side women out there. And with Tyler Loom's athleticism, one of the best, cleaner uppers, probably top 3, top 5 in terms of finishing the point. So his athleticism, even though some of his initial speed ups probably aren't earth shattering, I think the whole package of athleticism, put away power, and being a presence in that middle with that awkward lefty forehand puts him at the back end of the top 10.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I think kind of the first guy we have on the list that doesn't have the, as much as the creative offensive ability, what's the right way to say it? To
just like start the fire and trust your hands against
He doesn't have many speed ups like off the bounce. Like if I think his best speed up's a little poke out of the air that just gets it initiated. And then I think
inside out lefty forehand speed up.
Yes.
That's his one best one. That's his one best one.
A little poke out of the air. And then I think an underrated ability of Tyler is he can get tangled if you're attacking him off the bounce and you put in a weird spot. You can make him look silly, but like if he's initiating, his hands are underrated in my opinion. He's got really quick hands. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes overlooked oftentimes, but you're right. And then cleanup ability to finish the point, if it's a little high, he's really long. He can reach in the kitchen really well, and he can slap that forehand so it's not coming back.
Robert, loose arm overheads feel right.
Wet noodle,
guys. He's got that loose arm. I talk about it all the time. You're a big fan of it as well, Robert. Kind of
noodles.
Yes. Just get that loose arm whip, create that paddle head speed. And he does it very, very well. A lot of times you just know, you get in the situation and the point, that ball's not coming back. So Tyler Loom, number 10. And kind of getting jumbled up here, some tough calls already on the list, but especially moving forward, this is a weird person to rank, because he plays with a consistent good partner, but there is some personal stuff going on with that partner as well. So I'm going to put Julian Arnold at number 11. Great initiator of speed ups, really good offensive shake and bake, whether it's solo or traditional shake and bake, a rock solid offensive player. Some of his some of his weaknesses possibly with the soft game, much less of an issue in mixed. So yeah. I think it's fair to put Julian Arnold up at number 11, even if a couple people might think that's a couple spots too high.
Yeah, my initial reaction, probably a couple spots too high, but yeah. Yeah, just haven't seen a big enough body of work. Not that the talent and the ability is not there, but I don't want to say newer, but kind of started playing last year and has had great results and even better this year. Initial reaction's a little too high though, but all the talent in the world.
Yeah, sure. Definitely. And definitely not as long as a couple people we've mentioned on the list before, but I would say
very well.
I mean, his foot speed and his court coverage at probably around 5'10 is very, very high end. Very good footwork, very good movement from Julian Arnold.
And very good energy.
Very good energy. Number 12. Number 12, we have Gucci Zane Navratil.
With spin serve or without spin serve?
That's actually a really good, that's a phenomenal question. I don't know how I didn't even think that. This is Zane with the spin serve.
Yes,
this is Zane with the spin serve. And I great question. I don't know how I didn't process that, but I have him at number 12. He's had some really good results, really rock solid partner with Andrea Coop.
You're number two female in the world. So, but I mean, yeah, talking about a vacuum though, without Andrea, and let's put him with Susanna Barr. I think he's probably played some with Susanna Barr. He's a tough one for me because the game's so different when you're hitting short thirds.
I know.
It's
so hard.
And I know
it's
people
so
are
hard
like,
to rank them.
People are like, it's not that big of a deal. Everybody knows how to return it. It's still a big deal. I'm not able to like knife my backhand return as well as I would be if the ball didn't have that spin on it. And it's not just like, oh, it's a tough serve to handle. It's like even when I'm like hitting my backhand slice as a return, because it already has so much spin on it, my ball's floating. Even though it's going in and I'm not missing it, it's floating, it's sitting up, and it's just making it a very easy third forehand for him. So I don't think the common pickleball player or viewer understands how big of a deal it is.
Yes, I agree. I think a lot of people are just, you know, yeah, thinking of it as black and white. Oh, he made it, he missed it. And you, as you just mentioned, there is a ridiculous amount of benefit in that mid-range that doesn't involve just missed return, made return. And we've talked about it. To be honest with you, I think we probably talked about it maybe too much because it is such a huge factor. And Robert, it feels right to move on.
Yeah. But on your point, I think with the spin serve, that's an appropriate place for Zane.
Right. And I do think that I would have him a couple spots lower if not having that spin serve, which is going to be the case in 2023. So
I still think he'll crank serves like he did it before. Like he's got into the spin stuff, right? Like he was blasting serves regardless. So I think,
yeah, definitely,
you know, it's still a big part of his game. And
I love blasting serves. I think it's awesome. And, you know, I think you get a lot of benefits from it as long as you're not, you know, missing a crazy amount. So number 13, we have Tyson McGuffin, the crime dog at number 13. I think that how I would consider Tyson as a mixed doubles player, I think being in the middle of the list is completely right. I think he is a high floor, low ceiling option. He has a great forehand, you know, has a lot of power, can take a little bit of control with that, but he's not the biggest guy and he doesn't have some of the more high end weapons. So I think just a very solid average ranking, can't take anything away from the guy. He's there a lot. He's there. He's where he needs to be a lot in these tournaments. So I think that 13 is just a very solid yet unspectacular ranking for Tyson McGuffin in mixed doubles.
Yeah, I would probably put Tyson up at like probably the 10 ballpark. I'd move him up a bit just purely based on consistency of results. You're right. He's in the mix a lot, right? You can't take that away. I think it gets overlooked sometimes. Like he's always right there in the mix.
Okay. And, Yeah. Rob, I'm gonna say one thing. Yep. Of course, everyone on this podcast knows I don't like to toot my own horn, but I'm going to.
You like to.
So probably one of the issues I had with putting Tyson higher is that me and Corinne have beat him four times in a row. And
well, I'm you're just not a pickleball.
But I'm not sure that should happen, Rob. So
okay, you're valid, and like your point stands.
Twice in a row.
Sorry, TM, bro.
Yeah, four.
You can't let Prof and Adam Carr get you that many times.
that's for damn sure. So I know a lot of these results that Corinne and I had or playing Tyson was last year, of course. So not super recent, but we beat him twice with Lee Waters, beat him once with Callie, beat him once with Leia. I'm just saying, if me and Corinne are beating you four times in a row, I can't put you higher than 13, man. I just can't do it.
All right, done. I like that. That's okay. Fair. That's a fair point.
Fair. 14. Thomas Wilson. Like I said, this is a cluster. The last couple were kind of a cluster, and it's kind of a cluster for the next four or five or so. So I don't particularly have any crazy strong opinion. Super athletic, great mover, great power.
Compare him a lot to probably Julian. Like very similar in terms of like height, movement wise, big forehand. Yeah, that's how I kind of would see it.
Yeah, and he, I think he has had plenty of good partners, but also probably had some partners a little bit step lower. So, you know, maybe it's just tough with someone like that, or someone like that has kind of mixed and matched for someone like Matt and Lucy, who have played every single thing together. It's very, very difficult to know where to go. But I think, you know, just some of the physical tools put him right in the middle of the list at number 14. Number 15, Rafa Hewitt. So I think some people might think this is a bit high, but I actually think Rafa Hewitt is a better mixed player than men's player.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah.
And I also think that Sarah Ansberry is a very solid player, and when she is playing with a guy who can take so much court, only makes her better. So yeah. I'm not going to say Sarah Ansberry is a high-end talent in mixed doubles, but she is definitely someone who can hold her own with a partner like Rafa. That being said, I think that there's quite a few people on this list that have had higher-end partners than Rafa, who has played very consistently with Sarah over the last year or 18 months. So I think some of that firepower from Rafa puts him at number 15, possibly ahead of a couple other names that people might not agree with on this list.
Yeah, initial reaction is, of course, you know, probably high. But you're right. I've only really seen him play with Sarah, and the results he gets with Sarah, pretty impressive. And Sarah doesn't take a lot of court, and Rafa's got to cover a lot of court. And for a dude his size, he moves super well, covers behind him really well. I think he had some issues with consistency and, you know, but he puts a lot of pressure on his opponents with how, like, he plays really big and mixed. And it's, I don't think it's super unreasonable to have him at 15.
All right.
Until I see who you listed below him, and then I'll be like,
Number 16, Tower One, Andre Daescu.
I got Andre above Rafa.
Yeah, sure. And I think that's fine. You know, total, definitely one of the people that qualified as left side stud on my men's list. So yeah. I think that probably having Andre down here at 16 has a little bit to do with random inconsistent partners. I know he's played a little bit with Maggie Rimenzi.
We're doing this in a vacuum.
Yeah, I know. No, but I mean,
you put him in a vacuum.
I'm with you.
He's up there.
I don't hate it. I don't hate it at all. I kind of started right there with Thomas. I had some stronger opinions of some of those guys in the back end of the top 10, and this part of the list gets difficult. So I can take a smack to the face or some backlash on this one, and I think it's completely fine. I don't have much else to say about it.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. 17.
Yeah, 12.
Yeah, 17, Kyle Yates. So Kyle, you know, I know he's played a little bit with Anna Lee Waters, had a bunch of random different partners throughout the way, but he does have, I probably wouldn't say, we talked about it in men's as well, probably not in terms of like pace and quality and like lowness and still keeping it in those type of shots. Definitely some guys with a lot better stuff than Kyle, but he can put it anywhere. He can put it in a lot of spots. He can speed up on both sides, forehand and backhand. And when he gets hot with those, especially against a female. I think that he definitely has some tools at his disposal that make him a very good mixed player, maybe lacking a little bit of put away power when the ball goes up high. But I think creating some offense, Kyle can definitely do that. So I have him at number 17.
I like that. And just thinking based on what you're saying, one of the more versatile players in pickleball as well, right? Can play the left really well, can play the right. There's nowhere really on the court where he seems to be super uncomfortable. I'd probably put him as number two most versatile player behind Dylan.
Yeah, right, for sure. And I agree with that. And I think he also does a nice job. I've seen him multiple times in mixed get matched up on the right side with a guy in front of him. And he has got some really good shots to keep the guy honest. Totally. Yeah. And men's doubles, it gets a little more dicey because that player is more on their side. You know, some of the mid-court bounce forehands he likes to go up the line with and some of the shots to keep the guy honest when he's leaking middle, I think are very high quality. And I've seen him benefit from those shots many times in mixed I think when he's played quite a bit with Lee Waters as well, and she would play some left. So, yeah. So I think the versatility is a great asset for him, no doubt. Number 18, Thor's hammer, Pat Smith. The heavy-handed, what is Pat, German?
German, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's German. That's right, yeah.
The heavy-handed German?
The heavy-handed German. Let's grab a couple of cold ones. was that good?
Perfect.
So, perfect. Number 18, Pat Smith. Little bit of the kind of like Matt Wright, not the explosive mover that some of the guys higher on the list are, but just some heavy dang hands, lots of power. He's not necessarily someone who really crowds with his court positioning, but he will randomly pick his spots and make a poach or make a move on the ball. And I think he does a nice job of picking his spots and doing that. So Pat Smith, number 18 in the mixed.
Yep, I think it's a good spot. Maybe could have gone a little bit higher, in my opinion. Yeah. I think he's got some decent results with, also a mix of partners. So, excuse me.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I can make some errors and spurts. Lacks a little bit of the consistency sometimes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Long, can poke in the middle. Really good flicks. Forehand side and backhand side can tangle up the woman pretty good, and once he initiates, his hands are on it. Great countering ability and good bullying ability.
Yeah, no, definitely good spin, good power, lots to like there.
Better suited in mixed than men's, in my opinion, because there's less dinking typically in mixed.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you make that man bend. You can make him bend. You'll be in good shape. But he starts poking it on you or getting those shot combinations going. He's tough to handle with that power. Yeah. So number 19, Iggy, James Ignatowicz. This is a slight reach just from a result standpoint, but the skill set is very good. Lots of power. I like the hands. I like a lot of what he does. And to be honest with you, some of the guys behind him that were going to be listed soon enough, are fantastic players, but they're fairly vanilla when it comes to the mixed doubles, ranks and the firepower that you need. So I'm going to reach out on Iggy here. Don't think he is there to make my top 25 men's doubles player list as we saw, but I think that I can squeeze him in to this mixed doubles list. So I do so at number 19.
Nice. I haven't seen quite enough, but you're right. It's the same comment as I said with Pat. There's less dinking in mixed.
So, right.
You know,
right.
There's more. It's more offensive, more speed ups. The guy can play aggressive and move, and you don't have to dink a lot.
Right. Drive from both sides. Drive from both sides. Can poach. Nice backhand. So lots to like there. A little bit of an upside play without a long track record, but as I said. Just some rock solid names behind him with a little bit lower ceiling. So I decided to slot him in at number 19. Number 20, I have Spencer Smith. Spencer Smith, he's just a solid player. He just is. It's the same thing in men's. It's the, you know, the high floor, low ceiling combination. He's had some solid results with Elise Jones. Played a little bit with Cali as well, a couple of his Utah buddies. So, no, I wouldn't say earth-shattering results, but some solid results and a solid player. And he's very rarely going to, you know, lose it for you, maybe not come out there and blow anyone off the court. But I think he's just a rock-solid player, so I have him slotted in at number 20.
Perfect analysis. He's not going to give you a lot of errors. He's going to make a ton of balls, maybe lacks a little bit of the offensive firepower to, put teams on their heels. But, yeah, you know exactly what you're going to get. You know, when we talk about – high floor players. Yeah, I kind of put him kind of in that Steve Deacon camp where you know exactly what you're going to get from him day to day. And there's a lot of, as one of their partners, it's nice knowing exactly who's going to show up that day. You know, there's not a big question mark of, you know, is Spencer going to play great day or is he going to play terrible? He's going to play well.
Right.
That's what you're going to get.
Right. And
same with Deacon.
So, Robert, were you talking about my number 20 player or my number 21 player with that last description?
Your number 21. Go ahead.
Callan Dawson, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep.
So I think Callan, exact same description as Spencer. working on a little bit of firepower, but just, you know, not necessarily his most comfortable part of his game. Will randomly, you know, beat a good team and mix, but really does not have a lot of high end results on the mix side of the ball. But just like you said, you know what you're going to get, and that just means something, and that means enough to have him on my list at number 21.
Means you're going to get a lot of lobs.
Lots of lobs. 22, I could watch this guy play mixed all day. The facial expressions, you know, him trying to be aggressive from the right side, it's just super fun. Colin Johns, number 22. I know he's been working on the mixed a little bit. So freaking polar opposite from his role in men's doubles. You know, it just wasn't going to be a super smooth transition, you know, given the first few years of his career. All he was trying to do was lock in that right side with Ben. So randomly seen him in the draws beat a team or two, but definitely tough to be a full-fledged force from the right side. Colin Johns, number 22. Okay. Chuck Taylor, number 23. Chucky T.
Yep.
Long player, complete opposite of, you know, that 20 and 21 spot. He will lay an egg occasionally, but he will kind of have a few minutes of some spectacular shots. So a little more wider range of outcomes with Chuck Taylor, lower floor, higher ceiling. But when he gets hot with his length and some of his shot making, he can do some damage for sure.
I would say with Chuck Taylor, you know, just looking at like when I came into the sport versus now, I would say he's probably one of the most improved players that's been around mm-hmm. for a long time. You know, we talk about guys coming up plateauing. Chuck's been cool to see because he's been playing for a long time. And it feels like this slow, gradual progression of getting better. And I think he's still going to get better. So right. it's been cool to see.
I think right when I started, I would just label him a solid 5-0.
Yeah.
And he's playing a little bit more now, and he's a legit ass pro player now. So yep. I agree. And I think that he's had a nice progression as well. And, you know, maybe not those leaps and bounds, just a steady rise. And when he is, and when he is clean on a couple of the loose airs, there's a lot else to like about his game. So Chuck Taylor, number 23,
yep.
Number 24 and number 25, I went with two lefties, Pablo Tellez and Rob Cassidy. I don't really. It's just tough at this part of the list.
Yeah, I like both those.
Yeah, Cassidy can really create some havoc with that lefty forehand. Pablo Tellez, we've seen him multiple times in MLP in a couple of nice runs in some tournaments, beating some players he, you know, shouldn't on paper in that mixed game. Lots of power with that lefty forehand. So. Yeah, Pablo Tellez, Rob Cassidy, 24 and 25 to round out the list.
Yeah, I think that's great spots, and I think both those guys deserve to be on the list.
Robert, that's the list, man. That's 25, buddy.
Boom, boom, boom. I like it. I didn't reference Duper, so I have no idea who you left out, but I'm sure you left out some people.
Oh, I always leave someone. I left out DJ Young and Lindsey Newman in all my two lists. So but I think it's a reasonable list. Obviously, these lists are up for debate, and I liked a couple of things that you said, and it's always interesting to see kind of NML critique my list or see a comment online here and there about, and that being said, anyone else listening to this right now, throw a couple things in the YouTube comments. If you guys want to hear something on the pod, a topic revolving around pro pickleball or really anything, give us a shout in the comments, and we'll
if you'd like us to do this podcast shirtless, whatever you guys want, just Ooh. Tell us.
Dude, I'd love to break out the fur bird. Oh man, I got hair from the top of my head to the bottom of my toes, brother. one constant line. Me and AJ Kohler.
I mean,
I'm a very heterosexual man, but I could watch AJ Kohler shirtless all day. It's so furry.
Yeah, I'm getting like so a stitch furry in my ribs.
So wonderful. So wonderful.
So wonderful.
Love you, AJ. We're gonna get you on the pod. I hope you know. Okay, so Robert, I have nothing else. I did my list. This is on you now.
I think we should talk about MLP with some announcements. An email got sent out We've moved from three events in 2022 to six events in 2023 with a format change. So we have, let me actually pull this up. I have this email up, but it's going to be Thursday, Friday. Yeah, Thursday to Saturday. Thursday's singles, Friday mix, Saturday gender, and then a team event on Sunday where each team will play three matches. And this will happen six times throughout the year, all at six different locations throughout the country, kind of evenly spread throughout the year. Prize money has gone from $1 million in 2022 to $2.4 million plus in 2023. And there's, you know, they're paying pretty deep. I think in the tournaments, they're paying, I think I saw through eighth, maybe. You have no idea. You're saying, but
correct, Robert.
And so in terms of what are your thoughts on? It's the first time MLP is moving more to like a tour style format where they have, you know, you're having a tournament.
Right. So that's exactly what it is. It's a traditional tournament followed by a team event, and I actually believe, Robert, that of the six stops you'll play you have the 16 teams, so you'll play three matches each stop. So the first five MLP events, you'll actually get to play every single team in MLP. And then for the sixth event, it will be a team event with the final eight of those 16. So I think it's cool. I think they're mixing it up a little bit, kind of throwing in that traditional tournament format with a little spicy team event on Sunday. So I at first glance don't have a problem with it.
You know what especially, I do like about the tournament format that they're doing, which has always been a big, I don't know if it's a complaint, but it's always been a big issue in terms of staleness and viewership, is seeing the same matchups all the time. And we talked about the Triple Crown, right? Where you have to have different partners. So MLP is going with this format in a sense where you have to play with a different partner each tournament. So you can't you can't play with the same men's partner twice throughout the year.
For the six events, you can only play with them one time.
Yep.
Really? I like that.
I like that a lot. So it'll be
super cool.
And what's happening is they're going to be tracking results throughout the year individually in addition to the team stuff. And you're going to have, you know, there's going to be bonuses for the top doubles player, top singles player, top mix, all that stuff. And you'll be able to see who is the true best men's doubles player, women's doubles player outside of their normal partner, right? So it's going to get you're going to get a true feel of correct rankings, in my opinion, because you're playing with different people. So there's nowhere to hide. And I think it's going to be super fun.
Robert, that's great. I did not know. I mean, I obviously told you I didn't know a lot of the rules. I actually knew the six tournaments and the five format, the first five and then the playoff. But anyway, I think that's great. I think that's awesome that they're doing that. And it's not, that's just Triple Crown on steroids. You got to do it five times. You don't need three different players or partners. You need more than that. So that even, you know, kind of thins it out a little bit more. And often what people would do at the Triple Crown is they would pair up in fours and they would all play with each other. So this is a little bit different, a little more difficult to do that. And that's great. I think that's awesome. You know what else is awesome, Robert? 1.0 to 2.4 plus. That's not a small increase by any means.
Yeah.
More than double, possibly creeping on triple. That's awesome to see. And man, those floodgates are open. People, the talent's going to be rolling in. People recognize, I mean, numbers don't lie. Numbers just don't lie. And when you see that stuff, it's going to get a lot of buzz and a lot of intrigue going.
And the other interesting thing about this format is to play in these events, you have to be, it's not open. It's not an open event where anybody like we see now can sign up for it. You have to be a drafted MLP player to play in these events.
Ah, so we got a little cap going too. Okay.
Yeah. So I think the beautiful part is you're going to have limited draws. It's rally scoring, best 2 out of 3 to 21, which, you know, we talked about this a little bit last time. I kind of prefer the side out, but whatever. If you want to pay me money, I'll play whatever you want me to play. And you're playing at, you know, semifinals and finals will be at a certain time, which will be nice. And you're going to be playing in a smaller time window versus being at the courts from 8 to 8, you know, during the day. So less time on court, more money. It's a net win for me. I like it.
Yeah, I actually, maybe it was Prof that told me or something, but anyway, the email, I believe there was a specific kind of paragraph or few sentence talking about taking care of the pros and their bodies and making, you know, it be less of a grind, probably better quality play when there is a little bit less. So I think that's a great step, and it shows that they're really kind of conscious of that and want to put their best product out there and want to keep all of their players at 100%. Because when the players are at 100%, the points are better and the product's better. That's just how it goes. So
yeah, on that note,
that's great.
There's also an injury insurance policy that's going to be covering players, which is super helpful, especially for dudes like us, Adam.
Yeah, dudes like us, the walking wounded over here. So
and I think another complaint, or not, I don't know if it's a complaint, but another point that's been brought up a lot is how big that disparity is between first place money and second place money. Mm-hmm. You know, what was it this year? It was 25K per person versus
6, I believe.
6K, yeah. Huge 6K. Disparity. Yeah, and what we have next year for the end of year MLP team championships is you're going to have an 8-team single elimination bracket. Mm-hmm. So 16 teams total. So half the teams advance to the single elimination. Mm-hmm. First place team end of year gets 100,000 per team. So 25K per player. Mm-hmm. Second place gets 60K, so 15K per player. So they've made it much more reasonable in terms of that. Third and fourth place teams gets 10K per player, still legit. Fifth to eighth place. So even if you just make the single elimination bracket, you get an extra $5,000 just for sure.
Yeah. Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, that's real stuff. I mean,
I'm just going to keep rolling through this.
Yes, please do.
MLP MVP award. I'm not sure what that's going to be based on. It's not going to be a fan vote. But the MLP MVP award will be a $10,000 bonus to that player. Legit. Ooh. Now there is an MLP fan favorite award, which will be also 10K to that player. And what that's going to do. So in my opinion, what that's going to do is it's going to incentivize players to have more personality on court, to interact with fans more. I think that's a great incentive for players to kind of show their personality on court a little bit more and be more interactive with the fans. So I think that's a fantastic bonus to throw in there. Some very interesting season-long individual bonuses as well. So MLP will also pay out season-long individual bonuses for the most wins in men's singles, women's singles, men's doubles, and men's doubles. Doubles results will include both men's, women's, and mixed. So if you have the most, so number one, you get an extra $30,000 bonus. $30,000 bonus if you have the most wins in singles, doubles. I don't know if that's just for the top prize for the most singles and doubles wins will create a season-long narrative similar to the FedEx Cup in golf. Mm. Winners would be dubbed player of the year in singles and doubles, which would increase their marketability. Fact.
Man, sick.
But so first, so if you have the most wins, 30,000, second most, 24,000, 20,000, all the way down to 10, you get a $1,000 bonus at 10. But there's some money involved in this MLP stuff now. Mm-hmm. And on that note, I can call myself wrong because I stated many a times that there would be absolutely no way that PPA releases players to play in MLP. And slap my mama, it looks like they're going to be able to play.
Really? Really? Tell me. I don't know this. Tell me.
Based on some conversations I've had about some new contracts that have been shared, It sounds like as long as a PPA signed player plays in 21 PPA events, they'll be allowed to play 3 MLP events. If they play 25 plus PPA events, they'll be able to play all 6 MLP events.
Wow.
Which,
God, 31.
That's a lot of pickleball.
31 minimum. Man, that is hardcore. 31 tournaments minimum, not to mention whatever the hell else pops up, invitationals, yeah. exhibitions, that totally. Kind of stuff. Wow. I did not know any of that. That's fantastic information. Wow.
So I don't Ooh. Like, I guess the one question mark is I assumed that if you got drafted, you would need to be able to commit to all six.
Yeah.
Of them.
Yeah. So that's what would be my first question about the three thing, the half of them. How does that work?
Yeah, it's a good question. Because to play all six, you have to play 25 PPAs plus six MLPs. I mean, that's so much pickleball. Like, I don't know if that's not a healthy amount of pickleball by any means.
No, I mean, I've wanted to kill myself before, you know, when I was playing like 22 tournaments.
22, 20 dude, tournaments. 22. I hit my limit. I was like,
God dang, man.
I was so mentally taxed. Yeah. It's like, I'm done.
And we're going to talk about that eventually on one of these podcasts, is kind of list some of the trials and tribulations, not just physical, but mental, of the grind and some of the things going on now. No time today, but I think that's really cool. And that's great information about the PPA guys. I know that, I think we mentioned last podcast where you said Tyson kind of publicly mentioned that he was sad that he wasn't able to play. So, you know, maybe something like that going on. And of course, we haven't even talked about LeBron. I guess it goes up to 2.4 million when you get LeBron involved and Breeze involved and whatever else. So, and I no confirmation here, but through the grapevine, I've heard there's going to be a couple more kind of well-known possible owners introduced for the 2023 MLP season. No idea who it's going to be, but that's kind of the buzz about it. We'll see if old Stevie Kuhn and the MLP crew come up with any news kind of around this Columbus, this last MLP of this year, Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, I'm just really curious on like PPA's take and what changed for them, other than maybe just players being pissed and not having access to, you know, the largest prize pool in pickleball. outside of that, but every conversation I've ever heard with PPA was like, you know, even three events were too many, and now there's six.
Right.
And now they're open to it, which is why I said I'd be shocked if it happened. But
right, call me shocked. Robert, the biggest prize pool in pickleball at 1 million. Let's up that 150%. I mean, it was that before that. It's more than doubling now with the overall prize pool. So,
dude, we're talking 2.4 million for six events. I think that might be bigger than the APP's purse for this entire year over 30 events.
I think it's real similar. I believe they maybe posted something about 2 million even. So I'm not positive. I'm not positive about
But that's
it.
Over 30 events.
That's crazy.
We're talking six events.
I think it's 20. I think it's 20 events next year for APP.
No, I'm talking about this year.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, sure. But no, you're right. It's wild, wild money and some of those bonuses. Yeah, that wasn't, you know, most men's wins or most doubles wins. It wasn't 3,000. That was add a zero to that. That was 30K bonus.
Just maybe, for playing well.
Yeah, I mean, come legit. On, man. That's real stuff. I mean, you can run through MLP and make damn near 6K. I mean, six figures. It's wild. So really cool stuff. Awesome to see the big names and the big money follow. That's a great update on the MLP.
I'll run through the kind of the schedule. So
please do.
We've got it spread out. First event of 2023 is going to be in January, end of January. In Las Vegas at the Darling Tennis Center, which is where the PPA championships are being hosted this weekend.
Yes. I like that facility. It's really nice.
Seems very questionable in January. I think it's cold in January in Vegas. Oh, actually, I'm positive it's cold in January in Vegas.
It's like, it's going to be like mid 30s at 8 a.m. You know, it's like, it's crazy how different the ball is in the morning and the afternoon in the desert. It's crazy.
It is. It's a big deal. So yeah, that's a little iffy. That's the only iffy one I see here. March 23rd, Mesa, Arizona at Legacy Bell Bank Park, which has a ton of courts, but a cool stadium court. So that'll be a good setup for MLP. June 15th, Los Angeles, California, Sherwood Country Club. Don't know about that venue, but I'm sure it's going to be legit, especially being in LA. There's going to be a lot of star power there, I'm sure. Probably the king himself. September, Austin, Texas at Pickle Ranch East. And this is going to be, so met up with Tim Klitsch when I was in Austin having my surgeries done. And he kind of showed me where he's building this new facility. And it's going to be a really, really cool setup. And so he's going to have two Pickle Ranches, I believe. So Pickle Ranch East. So that'll be September of 2023. And then November, we have Bradenton, Florida at GT Bray Rec Center. Not a flashy name, GT Bray Rec Center, but hopefully they got a nice stadium court. Then December, so it seems like it's kind of heavy loaded in the back with September, November, December.
Oh, there's a triple. Okay.
September, November, December. December, we have Palm Springs, California, which will be super nice at La Quinta Resort and Club, which, we, you know, that's where the PPA Masters has been hosted. Very nice place.
Yes.
So yeah, that's 2023. Says draft applications will be sent to all players following MLP Columbus this month. I'm not sure when the draft for 2023 is going to be, but I would assume not too long after Columbus, which is mid-October. And then, you know, you have November, December, first event in January. I would imagine we might have a draft in November, early December. Mm-hmm. And then, man, exciting stuff though.
It is. It's tough because I'm ready to retire, but how can I do? I mean, if I make the top 32, how can I with all this going on? I mean, that's a great update, even better than I was expecting. Super cool with the venues, the six events, the prize pool ups, and the changes in format. So that's awesome stuff.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see if some of that, if I don't think it's official that the PPA players can play. Mm-hmm. We shall see how that unfolds. We'll be really curious to see who does play, mm-hmm. and how that all shakes out. But it'll bring the quality of MLP up. It'll be a tough one for people that have been on teams this year that won't be on teams next year if a significant amount of the players pop
over. Yeah, no, yeah, definitely. I mean that puts me kind of or people kind of in my range that were in that whatever 16 to 25 or 24 of this current MLP. You know, if you get however many of the PPA players coming over, and then who knows, a lot of things can happen in 3 months. Maybe a random player or two pop in there that could be in the player pool. That can make it tough. So, yep. But still, I mean, I think that's how it should be. And I think and how big and awesome these events are. And I think they're, you know, clearly going to be the best. You want that whole player pool in there. And, I think it's just a better product for everyone.
100%. Adam, it feels right to close out on that note.
Mm-hmm. It certainly does.
And it feels right for you to get another coffee, so you're just off the wall.
Yeah, I was a little wild on this.
You did great today. I'm really proud of you. Hey, really proud.
Hey, I appreciate that, but that means a lot.
Night night.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
Legendary. Yeah.